And welcome back to Dads on the Air, coming to you around Australia on the Community Radio Network. In this program, we bring you informing and entertaining conversations with a wide range of interesting people on topics of fatherhood, family and parenting, men's and boys' issues, and more. I'm Bill Cable, and our special guest today is Alice Nelson. Alice is the author of a new book called The Children's House. Alice was named as one of the Sydney Morning Herald's best young Australian novelists for her first novel, The Last Sky. The novel also won the TAG Hungerford Award and was shortlisted for the Australian Society of Authors Barbara Jeffress Award and for the Australian Vogels Literary Award. Alice, welcome to Dads on the Air.
Hi, Bill. Thanks for having me.
So, Alice, it's often said that you should write about what you know. I'm intrigued about a young university graduate from Australia writing about these major themes all set in New York. What led to those experiences for you?
Look, it was incredibly serendipitous. When I finished university here in Australia, I had this idea that to be a writer, you had to journey out into the world and do something adventurous and exciting. You couldn't possibly stay in your home. So I moved to New York, and I didn't have any plans to live in Harlem, which at that time, back in 2000, was a very, very difficult, very dangerous neighborhood. But I got a job working for an order of Catholic nuns, working as a family caseworker in a big social service agency working with newly arrived refugees and migrants. So I ended up spending several years working in community with people often in very difficult situations, trying to adjust to life in a new city while also trying to deal with a lot of traumatic experience from their own pasts. And that's how it all came together, really. It wasn't something I actually could kind of plan to do, but as such as life works, we often find ourselves in these fascinating situations where we grow immeasurably.
Well, I guess New York has always had a certain magic for you, like for most people.
Oh, yeah, I think particularly for writers and book lovers, you know, New York seems to be the literary city of the world, and everyone who's seen Woody Allen movies, and it certainly has a grip on the creative imagination.
So the title of your book is The Children's House. What is the special meaning of The Children's House for you in this book?
The actual concept of The Children's House, the real Children's House, refers to life on kibbutz in Israel, where children were actually raised communally in children's houses, so they were not raised by their parents. They were given over to nurses and raised in these sort of dormitory-style houses. They did have contact with their parents, but the philosophical argument was that children should be raised by the collective so that the adults would have time to work and to pursue other interests. And it was a very socialist, quite an extreme socialist philosophy. So I was really fascinated by, I'm really interested in parenting and children and the ways that we raise children and the different models of raising children across different times in society. It just seemed fascinating to me that here was this social experiment where children were actually separated from their parents from birth. And I wondered about the effects of that on the children. So I became quite fascinated and did a lot of research on that, and it just found its way into the book. But in a more general sense, The Children's House of the book really refers to the sort of metaphorical notions of home for children and how we create homes and how we fail children and how we resolve those failures.
The actual mechanics of this communal parenting are quite brutal, aren't they? I mean, after the child is born, not long after, it's sort of delivered to the community and taken away from the parent.
Yeah, look, at the most extreme form, but this is something that doesn't happen anymore. It happened in Israel's past. In the most extreme form, that is certainly what happened. Babies were delivered very soon after birth, and there wasn't that individual attachment to a mother and father that we would see as the norm for a child. And I found that quite brutal and quite amazing that a woman would be able to give over a child like that. And I think that the repercussions for the parents and the children were quite extreme in a lot of cases. I mean, some children did really well, but some also really, really found it quite traumatic.
The main characters, I guess, in your book, Jacob and Marina, they were both from a kibbutz, and it hasn't always been positive for them, has it?
No. Look, I think Marina in particular, she was raised in a children's house, and her experience and that of her brother, Dov, are based on a lot of interviews I did with children who were raised in those houses who really felt this enormous sense of deprivation. And it was really interesting to me that those children hadn't actually known any other experience. They hadn't known a world where you were parented individually by your parents, and yet they still felt such a lack of love and such maternal and paternal deprivation. So it seems like there's this innate need for that intimate bond with parents, which these children, even though they never had it, certainly felt an enormous lack of, and that affected their whole lives and their ability to parent their own children. And for many of them, it was actually a really traumatic experience.
Yes, I like the way you described it, that they became a type of forager, but they were not foraging for food the way we might think of it. They were foraging for love.
Yeah, I read this brilliant article about this notion of emotional foraging, that children who are neglected and deprived often have this ability to try and seek out whatever solace and love they can get from the world, and whether that's from a teacher or a kind adult or friends, parents. I think that it's this deep need in us to have ourselves affirmed by receiving love, and if we can't get that from our parents, I think we do whatever we can to try in some way to find it from somebody else. And often that works out really well. Often children can find other adults who can give them some of the things they need, but sometimes they can't.
There are so many stories in your book and so many fascinating insights. You deal with the trauma, but your book has also been described as a love song to the idea of families. Do you sort of see families as like the strong force in the natum?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I think that family is fundamental, and they're so complex and so intricate, and they can often contain opposing forces of love and pain and solace and betrayal and grief and joy. I think it's fascinating in terms of subject to write about. But I guess what I'm also really interested in, the fact that often it's not the biological family that works for somebody. I mean, in the ideal scenario, that would be true, but we often find families, if we're not fortunate enough to have a loving or functional immediate biological family, often you get these different configurations where people raise other people's children, foster care, adoption, and more informal networks of love and support that aren't always from biological parents. And I think that's a really inspiring and fabulous thing, to think that we can reach for a wider network of love and support if we can't get that from our own immediate nuclear biological family unit.
And we're speaking today with Alice Nelson, the author of a new book called The Children's House. We're going to take a short break now, and we're going to listen to a song by Renee Geyer and Glenn Shorrock, and this song is called Going Back.
A lot more than a skipping.
And that was Going Back by Glenn Sharrock and Renee Geyer. And we're speaking today with Alice Nelson, the author of a new book called The Children's House, which explores all sorts of family relations in an unusual setting for us in Australia. So, Alice, we were just talking about some of the characters. One of the main characters is Jacob, who is a successful psychiatrist in New York, but he has a personal disaster in his past. Can you tell us a little bit about him?
Jacob is a wonderful character, and he, as many people do, he made an extreme error in marriage. He fell for a very beautiful woman called Lenny, who turned out to be the most disastrous possible partner. She was incredibly immature and self-focused and probably just wasn't ready to be married. She was quite young. They did end up having a child together, and you know, I'm not sure how many spoilers I should give.
No spoilers.
Okay, well, anyway, this marriage did create considerable grief and sorrow for both Jacob and the child who was born out of that marriage. And what I was really interested in was the fact that Jacob, as a father, had to really step up and be there for this little boy who was in considerable grief. And, you know, I think that, you know, often we focus on the mother-child relationship, and I want to write about the way that fathers are profoundly important, and, you know, in the best case scenario, they would also be supported by a mother or mother figure, but sometimes that doesn't happen, and there are some extraordinary dads out there who are doing a fabulous job of parenting, often in very challenging circumstances. Jacob in the book is definitely one of those.
The major issues you cover, the genocide, you cover Nazism, you cover all these huge changes of the 20th century, but you also deal with something that's perhaps a bit more familiar to us, that Jacob's first wife just disappeared with a letter on the table and took all the furniture. And unfortunately, that's happened to quite a few of us.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the rug can be pulled out from us at any moment, and we have to find ways to recover and, you know, retrieve a sense of self. And sometimes, you know, in Jacob's case, there's a small child there who needs to be reassured and supported and brought up. And I think, you know, my work with refugees and asylum seekers, but also just my exposure to people and families and people who have had less extreme situations, is that you see this extraordinary resilience, and you see people who have been faced with terrible challenges, whether it's, you know, a political or historical catastrophe or something like, you know, your wife disappearing with a letter on the table, and have had to find ways to right themselves in the world and to carry on, and to particularly, you know, to be strong for children. And I find that incredibly inspiring and really extraordinary literary material.
He, luckily for Jacob, his second wife is Marina, who was interestingly named after a Russian poet, whether that's affected her life as well. But she develops this strong attachment for a young African boy, Gabriel. Do you think that attachment is healthy for both of them?
Yeah, look, that's one of the big ethical questions at the centre of the novel. You know, Marina gets, she meets this young child who does have a mother and becomes very involved in his life. And in a way, she falls in love with the child. She doesn't have her own biological children. She sees that this little boy is very needy, and his mother isn't able to give him the sort of love and support he needs. And I had this big question about, you know, she steps in and takes over with this child, but does that stepping in mean that his own mother is then sidelined and unable to parent him? Or was that stepping in completely necessary because this child was so neglected and deprived that he wouldn't have been okay if she hadn't become involved? So I think, you know, I didn't want to give an answer to that in the book. I hope that readers will think about that situation and think about what they might have done or how they might have responded, and come to their own conclusions about whether that act of stepping in and parenting somebody else's child was a positive one or not, because it's not as clear-cut as it being a positive or negative one, but a lot of repercussions for everyone in the book, and there's a lot to think about there.
And it was fraught because Jacob's first wife, Lenny, later attacked Marina for supposedly turning her son against her and for, you know, accusing her of not having her own child and taking on Gabriel in that sort of way. I think you must believe there is a strong maternal drive, though, that would have driven Marina to act in this way.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I think, you know, she saw this little boy and when she first encountered him, he's kind of having this terrible meltdown in the street and sobbing and crying. And I think that, you know, for most of us, when we see a child in extreme distress, there is certainly something in us that wants to step in and help and comfort that child and see what we can do to make things better. I think probably most of us wouldn't take it quite as far as Marina did in terms of the depth of involvement she then took on in that child's life and in his mother's life and the consequences that caused for people. But, yeah, I'd like to think that if we saw a child in extreme distress, we might try and do something to help.
There are so many what you might call unusual relationships in this family. You think of Marina's mother and the relationship between Constance and Gabriel, the Africans, and then there's Jacob's son Ben, who we mentioned a little bit earlier, and his natural mother Lainey, and then the new relationship with Marina. There are a whole lot of moral questions in this family, in these family relationships and how they develop between the parents, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I think that, you know, we live in an age where we get all sorts of tricky configurations of families and stepfamilies, and we have to navigate these really complex relationships, and it's not easy, and we do have to grapple with all sorts of ethical dilemmas about how we involve ourselves with other people's children, how we relate to perhaps our partner's ex-wife. There's a lot of tricky negotiation that's often required for a lot of people, and I wanted to write about that in the book because I think that it's reflective of how many families are in, you know, this day and time, and, you know, we don't always get the straightforward nuclear family. So I think probably for a great percentage of us, it's not quite that straightforward, and I wanted a book that reflected that and that perhaps people could see some of their own experience and their own struggles and their own dilemmas in.
Yes, your book, The Children's House, it threads together some fascinating topics. You know, you've included New York, you've included Africa, you've refugees from Rwanda, which is has got horror images for all of us, I think. The Jewish traditions are covered, but overwhelmingly the book deals, I think, with the love in the families. Do you see that there is a main lesson to come out of this book?
Look, I think what I would hope that if there was a lesson, it might be is that, you know, all those things you talked about, historical, you know, catastrophes, family difficulties, difficulties in life. I think that we often forget that simple acts of kindness are so important. In the novel, you know, there's lots of acts of kindness, individual acts and within communities and people who make sacrifices and stretch themselves to help others and without trying to sound sanctimonious or cliched. I think that sometimes we forget that, you know, an act of generosity, whether it's a small one, something as small as smiling at someone on the street or carrying their shopping, or larger acts are so important in a world that is not very easy for many people. So, I really wanted to write about those acts of kindness and how important they are, but also when they are big acts of kindness, how they can often have consequences we didn't foresee. I suppose that was, there was a takeaway from the book, that would be it for me.
Well, look, on that note, we've reached the stage of the show where we ask our guests if they'd like to pick a song. So, Alice, would you like to tell us the song you've picked and why you chose it?
Yeah, sure. Look, I think, you know, we've been talking a lot about complexities and different sides to different situations, and so that led me to think about one of my favourite songs, which is Both Sides Now by Joni Mitchell, who's a great favourite of mine. I think she probably would have been a favourite from the character Marina in the novel too. So I'd love to choose Both Sides Now by Joni Mitchell.
Rose and flows of angel hair, and ice cream castles in the air and feather canyons everywhere. I've looked at clouds that weep, but now they only block the sun. They're rain and snow on everyone. So many things I would have done, but clouds got in my way. I've looked at clouds from both sides now, come up and down, and still somehow it's cloud illusions I recall. I really don't know clouds at all. Moons and Junes and Ferris wheels, the dizzy dancing way you feel as every fairy comes real. I've looked at love that way, but now it's just another show. You leave them laughing when you go, and if you care, don't let them know. Don't give yourself away. I've looked at love from both sides now, somehow it's love's illusions I recall. I really don't know love at all. Tears and fears and feeling proud to say I surface crowds. I've looked at life that way, but now old friends are acting strange. They shake their heads, they say I've changed. Well, something's lost, but something's gained in living every day. I've looked at life from both sides now, from win and lose, and still somehow it's life's illusions I recall. I really don't know life at all. I've looked at
that was Both Sides Now by Joni Mitchell, as chosen for us today by our special guest, Alice Nelson. Alice is the author of a new book called The Children's House. So it just remains for me now to give a special thank you to you, Alice. Alice, thank you very much for speaking about this fascinating and very, very in-depth work you've written, The Children's House. Thank you very much for being on Dad's on the Air.
Thanks so much for having me, Bill. It was a great chat. Thanks.
And don't forget, we'd love to hear from any of our listeners. You can go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, and send us an email. We'll be in touch. If you'd like to listen to this show again or any of our shows, go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. And we'll be back next week with another show on Dads on the Air.